Parshas Tzav. Towards the beginning of the Sedra, we have the commandment of the Kohen as he officiates in the Mishkan Beis Hamikdash. And the Pasuk tells us, Perek Vav Pasuk Dalad, Ufashat Es Begadav V'Lavash Begadim Echirim. And the Kohen takes off the clothing he is wearing, and he puts on other clothing, Begadim Echirim. V'Tziyatz HaDeshen El Michus L'machane El Makom Tohor. And this is in order to take off the ashes, Hotziyatz HaDeshen, he takes the ashes off the altar, the Mizbeach. So Rashi comments on this changing of clothing of the Kohen, and he says, "Ufashatas begadav, ein zu chova, ela derech eretz." Rashi says this is not an obligation, it's not a chova, it's just a derech eretz, it's good manners, it's acting in a proper way. Why? Shelo yelach lech beotzas adeshen begadim shu meshamesh behem tamid. In order that he shouldn't get his clothing that he usually wears as when he officiates in the Beis HaMikdash, he shouldn't get them dirty when he takes out the ashes. As Rashi concludes, Begadim shebishel ben kedera l'rabo al yimzog ben kos l'rabo. He says the clothing that one wears when cooking a pot for his master, of course this is a mashal, he should not pour the cup of wine for his master. V'lavash begadim acherim pchuti mehem, and therefore the Begadim that he's switching to, of course, says Rashi, are clothing of a lesser stature, clothing that are not as nice. So the Ramban on this pasuk brings down Rashi's commentary, but he doesn't understand where is the source of this. Where does Rashi get this from? That the Kohen is not supposed to wear his regular clothing for taking out the ashes, he has to wear lesser clothing. So, as we're going to see, it could be, I'd like to suggest, that perhaps the source is not a particular place in Chazal, but Rashi got it out of what's called it logic, as we'll explain. Let's go back to Parshas Toldos. We have the brachas that Yitzchak wanted to give his son. He had ordered Esav to bring him some food because he wants to give him a bracha. And Rivka got word of this and told her other son Yaakov that he should disguise himself as Esav and go in front of Yitzchak, her husband who was blind, and act like Esav and to receive the brachas. So the pasuk tells us that that Yaakov Avinu, he wore Esav's clothing, and the Dasa Kainami Balia Tosfos brings a midrash that describes that these clothing were special clothing. These clothing once belonged to Nimrod, and on these clothing, which they say even dated back to Adam Arishon, this clothing, but Nimrod was the last one that had it, and they had pictures of chayot, of animals and birds and things on the clothing, and they were looked like real life, like 3D. And as a result, when Nimrod would go out hunting, the various animals would be attracted to these clothing, and then they would be able to be caught. So these were then in the hands of Esav, and these were the clothing that Rivka took and told Yaakov Avinu, her son, to wear, to don. However, the Dasa Kainim asks a question on his midrash. He asks, why was it necessary for Yaakov to wear these garments? Why did he have to wear them? And he answers, it must be in order that he should feel like Esav. What's the idea? So the Chidushi Alev explains the question and then the answer. He says that at the time of receiving of the brachas, as we know, Yitzchak, we said, was blind. So if that's the case, the Midrash, the Dasa Kainim is asking, why was it necessary, therefore, for Yaakov to wear special clothing? Yitzchak couldn't see it anyways. So what's the difference? He could have worn anything. Yitzchak was blind. So why did he have to wear it? That's exactly what Dasa Kainim asks. Why was it necessary for him to take off the garments of Esav? And the answer is, in order that he should feel like Esav, meaning, we see from here a big Yisod. And that is that the clothing of the person makes a person, right? It forms a person. It gives a person feelings and ideas based on what he's wearing. And therefore, Rivka knew that Yaakov had to make a good disguise job and to impersonate himself as Esav. So, okay, he put on the skins so his father, if he feels him, he'll feel hairy. But that wasn't enough. He had to, it wasn't just, when he would touch him, he had to act like Esav. So Rivka felt the only way that Yaakov could really act like Esav, really feel like Esav, is only if he dresses like Esav. And therefore, she made sure that she dafka took Esav's clothing and put it on Yaakov. Yeah, of course Esav couldn't see. But it wasn't for that. It was so that Yaakov would feel like Esav, and then his impersonation would be so much better. So once again, we see the influence that clothing has on a person. We find a similar idea in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov taught that even at a time of danger, one should not change his official dress. And the Gemara learns this from Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah, that they wore their royal garb when they got thrown into the fiery furnace. So the Marsha explains one possible reason. Why did they do this? Why did they wear their fancy royal garb when they're just anyways going to get burnt or being thrown in the furnace? At least they thought they were going to get burnt. So why would they dress up in their finest garments if they're going to anyways go into the furnace? So the Marsha explains, he says the following, I'll translate. He says, a person should not appear to be troubled and in mourning over heaven's decree, but he should rather accept it with love, happiness, and in an honorable way. So therefore, Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah, they all wore their fancy clothing, got thrown into the furnace, in order that they should accept Hashem's decree, we said, with love and happiness, as the Marsha puts it. So what do we see from here? That if they had not worn this clothing, they would have not accepted Hashem's decree with love and happiness. So once again, we see the same idea that how clothing affects a person. If they knew, if they wanted to feel this love and happiness and accept Hashem, whatever He does is for the best, in order to feel this, they have to wear these their nice clothing. Once again, the clothing has an effect on a person. We see it, Lamaisa, every day. Every person can tell himself that he feels differently if he's wearing, a pair of Bermuda shorts and a tank top, or if he's dressed in his suit and a tie, right? You feel different. And you see it with kids. I once, someone made this Sahara, they told me. They said, you take a kid and you put on a little kid and put on, an Indian outfit, give him a spear and a bow and arrow and have feathers coming out of it, and then watch how the kid acts. He's going to run around like a wild animal. Right, but when you dress him up for Shabbos, put on a tie and a suit, you see he doesn't act with the same as wild. Why? Again, even my kid, you can't help it, but act differently depending on what you're wearing. And that's of course one of the reasons why davening, etc., we are told we should dress up, because we are standing in front of the king, and besides giving honor to the king by dressing up, it's for ourselves also. Because if we dress up nicer, so we feel like we're standing in front of the king. And that's good for us, as we said. The importance of clothing brings to mind a story of the Rebbe Migur, the Beis Yisrael. It says once there was one of his chassidim had to travel. He had to leave the country. He had to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laretz. And he was going to Belgium. So, anyways, he had an important business to take care of, so he left as a bacher, and he went to Eretz Yisrael. He went from Eretz Yisrael to Belgium. So while he was at the hosts that he was staying at, all of a sudden there's a knock on the door, and They open the door, and who is it? It's somebody says he's from Eretz Yisrael. He just arrived from Eretz Yisrael, and he has this bag, and he says, here, this is from the Rebbe. It's for this bacher. And that's it. He doesn't say anything more. Leaves the bag, and goes. So the bacher opens, looks, you know, takes out what's the contents of the bag, and he finds it's a kapata, right? The long coat, the chassidim wear. So what had happened? He said, the Rebbe, right, he knew that this bacher was going to Chusra, was going to Belgium, and he had a suspicion that perhaps since he's going to Chusra, he's not going to dress in his Chassidus shagar, which bothered the Rebbe. He wasn't sure, but he, sure enough, went out of his way and told the shamish, can you please check if he took his kapata? And he, you know, got in touch with his family, where he said, no, as a matter of fact, it's still hanging here in the front closet. So the Rebbe said, do me a favor, I have something going to Eretz Yisrael, give him the kapata and tell him to bring it to him. And sure enough, this was the kapata that the bacher received. So we see the importance, the Rebbe knew, the importance of clothing, right? You wear clothing and it affects you. And he wanted this bacher to feel like he's still in with the kedusha and the chassidus, whatever, even if he's in a faraway land. It reminds me of another maisa, that the importance of keeping clothing nice. There's once a young man. Also, he went into had to visit his rebbe. Actually, it was one of the says in the story he recalls with some guttle, didn't say who it was. But he went into the house and was waiting to see the Rav. So in the meanwhile, the Rebbetzin was there, and she took a look at this bacher's tie that he was wearing, and he said to the bacher the following. He said, listen, she said to him, there's certain kalim, certain vessels that are makabel tumah. Okay, they can become tamei. And if they get ruined to a certain degree, so then the tumah leaves them. And then they're not a kli anymore, they get a hole or whatever. So then it doesn't have a din of the tumah leaves. However, if you sew on a patch and make it whole again, then the kli, then receives tumah once again. They say the old tumah comes back, because now it's shalim once again. So she said, however, said to the bacher, you should know that this doesn't apply to ties, to neckties. Says a necktie that has a patch on it, she says, that's not a necktie. She said in Yiddish, a schnips mit alata, as kein schnips nicht. Says a tie with a patch, she says, that's not a tie. In other words, she was telling him, in a lumdish way perhaps, that you have to, as a Talmud Chacham, you have to be careful what you wear. And his tie was obviously, he didn't meet up to their standards. And she told him in a nice way that you have to realize you're a Talmud Chacham and you're presenting the Torah. And you have to be careful what you wear. And as we said, it affects the person himself. So back to the matter at hand, where we asked, where does Rashi get the source that the Kohen has to change his clothing? So it could be that the reason why the Torah didn't command, as Rashi said, it's not a command, it's not an obligatory thing, the Torah's not saying he must, is because the Torah knew that it's by changing the clothing into lesser clothing, it's going to affect the person negatively, somewhat. He's going to feel a little bit degraded, because he's on wearing clothing, they're not as chashev. And we know, says Rachel, Darchei Noam, Bechol Nesivos Shel Yisrael, we say that the Torah's ways are always perfect and good and pleasant. As it says in the Pasuk, its ways are ways of pleasantness, and all its paths are peace. So therefore, the Torah does not like to command something which is something negative, which represents negative impact, have a negative impact on a person. And therefore, here too, the Torah didn't want to give a command to do something which would bring a person down, feel lesser in any way, and therefore it was not made an obligation. However, as we said, an obligation it's not, but a person himself should want to put on the clothing And why? As we said, because it's an inyan of Derech Eretz. So here, we actually learn another lesson. And that is the importance of Derech Eretz. Because even though, again, by changing the clothing, it's going to make him feel lowly or whatever, take it in effect as, you know, the dignity, but still, it's he himself should want to do that. Why? Because of the importance of Derech Eretz. Another place we see this concept is in Chumash Shmos, Parshas Bo. And Moshe and Aaron, they warned Pharaoh concerning the upcoming Makkah, the plague of locusts, the Arba. So they warned him, then they left him, they left his presence, they left Pharaoh. After which, a shaliach came, a messenger came, and he came in behalf of Pharaoh. He says, Moshe and Aaron, Pharaoh wants to speak to you again. So they came back, and then they discussed about leaving Egypt for 3 days, etc., and who to take, and the whole back and forth dialogue between Pharaoh and Moshe and Aaron. So then, the pasuk concludes, and they, referring to Moshe and Aaron, were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. He said, get out of here. He drove them out. So the Riva asks, why did Moshe and Aaron hang around Pharaoh's house until it was necessary that he had to drive them out? So he answers, since Pharaoh sent a messenger to retrieve them, so they didn't want to leave until they received explicit permission from Pharaoh. So here, once again, the Chiddush Halev explains, what's the Riva saying? He says, again, the question is here, that surely Moshe and Aaron, they understood that if they hang around Paro's house too long, that he's going to kick them out. They understood that, surely. So the question is, why did they do that? Why did they wait there until the point where he drove them out, which was surely a very embarrassing situation? Which reminds me of a Maisa, say with the Gra, that once he was collecting money with he was going with one of the Talmidim, Gabayim, whatever, and he was collecting money. He went to some Gvir, some rich person, and they knocked on the door, and the maid or whatever, you know, welcomed him in, ushered him in, says, okay, the bride will come so shortly. So a few minutes later, the Balabite comes. And he sees standing inside there the Gra and this Shamish. And he says, what are you here for? He says, well, I'm collecting money. He says, collecting money? I don't get money. Get out of my house. He starts screaming at him. So the Shamish, of course, was in shock. He quickly runs out of the house, dashes out of the house. And but he looks next to him. He sees the Gra's not next to him. And he hears from inside the guy, again, is still screaming. Get out of my house. I told you when you're leaving. He's screaming and screaming, and the Gra is just standing there. So finally, a few minutes later, he walks out. So Shamish turns to the Gra and says, Rebbe, I don't understand. I mean, you obviously understood this guy's not going to give you a penny. And how come when he told us to get out, you didn't run out like I did? Why did you stand there? So the Gra explained. He says, listen, you know, obviously the guy didn't know who I was, you know. And most people know who I am. And as a result, you know, everybody always gives me honor here and there. And the Chazal say that the guest has to listen to everything the Balabais tells him to do, except for leave. Chazal, right? Except for leave my house, then you have to, you don't have to listen to the Balabai, but everything else the Balabai tells you to do, you have to listen. So he says, I never had an opportunity to Mekayim this Chazal. Because whoever throws me out of their house, nobody throws me out of their house. So I never have the ability to Mekayim this Chazal, not listening to the Balabai that tells me to leave. Because nobody tells me to leave. So here I had an opportunity. Finally, somebody telling me to leave, and I can stay there and not listen to him and Mekayim the Divrei Chazal. I took the opportunity. So anyways, I don't know if that was Moshe Aaron's intent over here by Pharaoh. But so therefore the question is, why were they willing to suffer the embarrassment and not just leave before Pharaoh kicked them out? So that's on that, the Riva answers. And he says that since Pharaoh requested them to come, and he called them back to his palace to speak to them, so they felt it's not Derech Eretz to leave before being excused.
not derech eretz. Somebody invites you and over and calls you in, so you don't leave until he says, okay, please, you may leave now. It's not derech eretz to leave without permission. And therefore, they knew that even though they're going to be thrown out if they don't leave, because Pharaoh's not going to tell them nicely to leave, he's going to throw them out, but still, even though they knew they're going to suffer a humiliation, embarrassment, whatever it might be, but that was took precedence. In other words, the proper derech eretz took preference over saving their humiliation. And that despite Moshe and Aaron, who they were, you know, these are the great, the gedolei hador of the time, and to suffer humiliation is very degrading, etc. But all said and done, still, derech eretz, they felt, takes preference, and therefore they didn't leave until they were thrown out. So we see from here the importance, which we learned also from the clothing of the Kohen, and once again here from Moshe Aaron, the importance of derech eretz takes preference over even one's personal feelings, his honor. He has to put that aside when it comes to derech eretz. It reminds me of a story that, speaking about derech eretz, that once Rabbi Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, he had some talmidim that he wanted to check out, and he sent a number of bachrim to the Saba Mislabatka, if I remember correctly, and he asked him to, you know, so, yeah, speak to the boys in learning, etc., to see, get an idea who these boys are. So, fine, the Saba did that, and then he reported, he said, this boy is like this, this boy is like that, and then he pointed out one particular Bacher, and he says, oh, and this Bacher, nothing good is ever going to come from him. So, Visser Zalman was shocked. Why? Because it was Dafka, this Bacher, that was, he was like the Elui, he was a genius. And he was the top bacher in the yeshiva, and he was surprised that why the altar said such a thing. So he explained. He said, "Why?" He says, "Because while they were sitting around and, you know, I was talking to them, I served them tea and coffee. So when this bacher was putting some sugar in his tea, so some of the sugar spilt out on the table next to the cup, and I noticed." I caught a glimpse that the Bacher took his finger, stuck it in his mouth, wetted it with saliva, and then rubbed it on the sugar, which was on the table, and then stuck his finger in his mouth. Okay, to eat the sugar, swipe up the sugar from the table and eat it. So I saw this, that's not derech eretz. And someone who doesn't have derech eretz, says no good can come from him. So that's what he told. And as it happens, this Bacher, eventually, because of his genius, so he was eventually landed a job as a rav. But for whatever reason, it didn't last, and he lost his position. And later on, he got into other bad things, and he ended up in jail. So the Saba was right when he saw that the importance of derech eretz and somebody who doesn't have derech eretz, what it could lead to. Another thing to remember is that is the importance of derech eretz, that every now and then, you know, we seem to lose sight and forget who we are, where we are, and it's very, very important to be at our best and to be strong in this area of derech eretz. We saw, even if it means our personal degradation or whatever, but how important it is. So I saw once Leilu L'Shabeach, he brings down, there was a certain rav that he got into a taxi, and the taxi driver quoted him a certain amount, and he started getting into an argument with him. And the Maisa, they were arguing about a couple of shekels, like nothing, not a major amount. You know, he wanted 32 shekels, he says, no, it's only 30 shekels, whatever. And this driver wasn't religious, and he got into a whole big argument. And he said, you know, where's the derech eretz? I mean, you have to be careful. People looking at you, you're presenting the Torah. Two shekels? I mean, who cares? So he doesn't, okay, so you're my father. Maybe you're not saying who's right. fine, you're right. Maybe you're right. It's 30 shekels and not 32 shekels. But it's not worth the 2 shekels to degrade yourself. You have to act in with the Erech Eretz in order not to degrade yourself, even if you're going to degrade yourself. So what's going on over here? It reminds me of another story I saw. We'll end with this. Also with the same kind of topic, but we see the opposite, though. There was once an Avreich, and he was by the Lishkata Gius in Tel HaShomer. Not important exactly where it was, but that's happened. That was the story. And he had to take a cab to his house. Wanted to take a cab to his house back to Bnei Brak, where he lived. So he saw a taxi was standing there, and he waved them down, and he got in. So he says, how much to Bnei Brak? So the taxi driver quoted him an amount, which he thought was quite high. It was he was overcharging him. But as opposed to the previous Maisa, he saw that this driver wasn't religious, and he saw, you know, I'm going to make a Kiddush Hashem over here. I'm going to act with extra Derech Eretz, and I'm not going to make a fuss. I should really. It's not he's overcharging, but I'm not going to say anything. So he said, fine, okay, and he got in the car. So they're driving not very far, a few meters, and he looks outside and he sees that in another car, a friend of his. And he saw his friend in the car, and he's so interested, he's at a stop sign or light, whatever. So he yells out, he goes, hey, where are you going? He says, well, I'm going back home to Bnei Brak. So he says, oh, so am I. So he says, why don't you come out, you know, come with me, you know, get out of the taxi and come with me. So he said, okay, fine, you know, pull over. So his friend pulled over to the side, and then he told the taxi driver, this, listen, you know, my good friend of mine, and he's driving anyways to Bnei Brak, so I'd like to get out and go with him. So the taxi says, okay, you know, fine. So now came the big Kiddush Hashem. So what did he do? He got out of the cab, and he gave him the full amount of money that he had quoted him, and said, here. Puts it in his hand. Taxi driver says, what are you doing? What are you paying me for? He says, well, you know, you told me how much it's going to cost. You quoted me the amount, and I wanted to pay you. So he says, and I'm a seder, but that's only if I was to take it, but I didn't take you, so it's not right that I take the money. He goes, no, but you would agree to take me, and you had business, now you're losing the business, it's not right, so take the money. He says, no, I can't take the money. Anyways, back and forth, he didn't want to take the money, he wanted to give the money. In the end, he insisted that he takes the money. But at the same time, he thanked him so much. He asked him, what's your name, etc. And he told him, he says, wow, that's really nice of you. He says, okay. And the taxi driver drove off. And the person went with his friend back to Bnei Brak. Anyways, the story doesn't end here. There's a nice finale to it. And what happens? So this same Avreich, a while later, I don't know how long, days, weeks, month, but he gets a knock on the, he gets a call on the telephone, and he says, I don't know if you remember me, this voice says on the other side of the line, but once, a while ago, I was driving my cab, and you got in the cab by Tel HaShomer, and he tells him, this reminds him of the story, how you let him out. So he says, you remember me? I was the cab driver that you gave the money back. He says, yeah, of course I remember you. So he says, oh, would it be okay if I come over with my wife to visit? So I said, oh, sure, you know, why not? He says, okay. So he comes over, and all of a sudden he walks in the house, and he sees this guy. He could hardly recognize him. He's wearing a kippah, and his little beard. He's, you know, and his wife's covering her hair, and he's going, like, what's going on? So he says, you know, I'll have you know that what you did that day was made such an impression on me. I couldn't believe it. You know, the way you acted was such Derech Eretz, how you gave me the money and you wouldn't even take it back, even though I didn't take you. And I was so taken aback. I said, if this is a way a religious person acts, so I want to be part of them. And I came home and I told my wife, and she was also so impressed. And that led to took our kid out of the regular school, send him to a religious school, etc. And it changed our life. We decided we'd let you know that. It's of course a very emotional meeting, but here we see the opposite, right? How sometimes you're bracking with proper derech eretz, and you put the how much did it cost? Okay, it cost the guy maybe, I don't know, 50 shekels, okay? But these 50 shekels made a family from. Isn't it worth it? 50 shekels to make a family from and keep the Torah. And who knows? His kids and their kids and all the schuyos of all the from people that are going to come out of the family are all because of this one guy who is mevater in 50 shekels. So surely one or two shekels, it goes without saying, right? That so we see that the not only the derech eretz is important, but lack of derech eretz what can lead to, but we see that it can bear tremendous fruits. So therefore, in conclusion, let's summarize a couple of points that we mentioned today. And that is, number one, the importance of clothing, how clothing have an effect on a person. Therefore, he has to be careful how he dresses, what he wears, what he dresses his kids, etc., because it affects the person. And likewise, we also learned the importance of derech eretz, and how it's important to act with derech eretz, the people, how it affects other people. And the Mirz Hashem, if we take these lessons to heart, and we do our utmost to act in the proper way, Hashem should answer all our tefillahs, and mezakeh us with the coming of Bias, Mashiach Tzidkenu, b'mehira b'yameinu.